gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
And I am the one and only Sasha Kaplan. And today, we return back to our journey of extacular, ecstatic, all right, this is just X2. The funny thing is like, just like with Spider-Man 2, I think X2 was kind of heralded as like the best of the original trilogy. We're going to see if that still holds up. Dun, dun, dun. So we're going to start off with our continued trend of awkwardly unnecessary voiceovers with statements about society's attitude towards mutants, the suspicion, the hatred, the bigotry, yada, yada, yada. And how mutants are the new species. Like, is the question is, like, are mutants the new species of humanity? Or are they, like, the next step in human evolution? The answer is kind of both, but whatever. So we have kind of like a spinny intro to Cerebro and then like to a brain tunnel. And then we end up at the White House where there's like a tour guide quoting Lincoln. And, you know, funny enough, White Houses don't do tours like that anymore, but whatever.
Well, keep in mind, this is like early 2000s still.
This movie came out in like 2002, but still.
Well, that's still early 2000s.
Anyway, so the White House is, there's like a bunch of tourists, everything's fine, and the president wants to spend time with his son, so he's asking his secretary to change his schedule. Meanwhile, there's like a mysterious noise, and there's a very shady, very obviously shady looking coat person. It's like that like old cartoon trope of like the two kids, like one climbing up on top of the other and putting a coat over there. Like, nobody will notice we're actually children under here as we try to sneak into an R-rated movie. Oh, wait. Anyway, so he comes, basically this is Nightcrawler, but when we first see him, he kind of looks humanish, human-y-esque. It's like they took his regular blue face and just like painted it white. He is coming after the president. He basically walks through the entirety of the Secret Service. You'd think after what happened in New York, they would have, like, I don't know, done some training or something. To be honest, this makes the Secret Service look kind of incompetent. But he basically, even, you know, factoring in that Nightcrawler is an acrobat and a teleporter, but he basically walks through all these guys and he ends up like towering over the president and like his tail gives him the knife. It was a very cute moment. And he's about to stab the president when one of the Secret Service agents finally remembers he has a gun and shoots him. And then he teleports away. But the knife still remains stuck in the like table that says, it says mutant freedom now on the knife. Something of note, the desk for the president took like 2 months to build to make it look like an exact replica, which is funny because there's like 5 different desks or something that the president can use. And like, while it's I guess the attention to detail is appreciated, I wish they would have paid that much attention to other parts of this movie. So meanwhile, Wolverine arrives at Alkaline Lake, which is in Canada, or Alkali Lake. I will mispronounce it literally the entire time. And there's like a dam and like snow and like a door and a wolf, and that's pretty much it. So then we have like Storm is giving a talk at the Museum of Natural History about evolution. Jean and Scott are like in a different part of the museum. And Jean hears lots of voices. She's been having some issues, I guess, concentrating since what happened in New York. And she says that her telepathy is just like out of whack and she can't concentrate. But apparently when she has a nightmare, the bedroom shakes and she's just having bad dreams. And she's feeling like something bad is going to happen. I'm like, you're a mutant. Something bad is going to happen is not exactly a profound statement. Meanwhile, Rogue and Bobby are missing. And Storm's like, where are they? Jean locates them out in the food court. And they're basically just like, Johnny's being a dick. And there's like these two dudes that are like, just give me a light. Just give me a light. And Johnny's just being Johnny. And like, at first, it seems like Rogue and Bobby are kind of like into it, like, ha ha ha, like, make fun of the humans. But then they're like, come on, like, it's run its course. Come on. And so the one of the human guys steals the lighter, and Johnny makes his cigarette explode. And Bobby puts it out. And like, I gotta give Bobby credit. He hasn't learned the fine art of subtlety. Because when Johnny makes the cigarette like explode, it's subtle. But Bobby, it's like a freaking ice wave. And like, obviously somebody's gonna notice that. But all of a sudden everybody freezes, and Rogue is like, Bobby, did you do this? I'm like, Bobby doesn't freeze time or freeze people in place. He just puts them in a block of ice. It's very different. But no, it's Charles that did it. And weirdly enough, only the humans froze, and the mutants are quickly pushed to exit. There's a TV report about the White House attack, and they're saying that a mutant was responsible. Scott thinks it's Magneto did it and like orchestrated it while he's, you know, in his plastic prison. Charles is like, he's smart enough to do that, but he probably didn't do it for some reason. So Charles has been tracking the mutant they believe is responsible. It's not really clear how he knows that that's the mutant responsible. Maybe he got whiff of him on Cerebro by the White House or something. It's like, it's probably this guy. But his movements are very erratic, so he's having some trouble tracking him.
Or maybe because his movements are so erratic, that's why he thinks that it's the one.
That's a stretch. Anyway,
well, I mean, let's be honest.
We also see hints of, like, a little bit later, we see hints of, like, Hank McCoy's existence, because he, like, is in an interview, and it's just, like, says Hank McCoy talks about things. But anyway, a man named William Stryker arrives at the White House, and he needs the president's authorization on something. Some creepy secret operation. And Senator Kelly arrives. Remember the Senator Kelly that died in the last movie and got replaced by Mystique? That, yep. Senator Kelly. So Stryker has a proposition as a woman who is, I guess, she's made to look like a secretary, is like weirdly cracking her fingers. It's like kind of creepy. So Stryker says he's found evidence of a mutant training facility, and that he has info that he gained from Eric's this is like information he gave from interrogating Eric. Mystique, while being not completely stupid, tries to cover up for Charles and is like, well, this is a school. And to which Stryker responds, well, there's a jet coming out of the basketball court. I'm like, what? Rich, fancy private schools can't have a private jet? Basically, the president tells him to detain and question, and he'll allow it, because the last thing he wants is a dead mutant on TV. Stryker takes that a little too literally, in my opinion. But anyway, Senator Kelly wants access to Eric, to which Stryker says no. And there's like this talk about like, do you think we're at war, Mr. Stryker? And he's like, I was fighting in Vietnam while you were. He does the whole I was an army man and I'm going to be a dick to you thing. And he says that they're already in a war. And meanwhile, Bobby tries to kiss Rogue. And we finally see Peter Rasputin, who has forever become the background X-Man, which is really sad because he has such an interesting storyline from the comics. Like, a lot of the characters that aren't Wolverine do. And it's funny because Peter's, like, sketching, and he passes it off to the kid he's, I guess, tutoring in, like, biology or something. It's like a Bobby exploding from Rogue's kiss. It's kind of a cute little caricature, so kudos to his art skills. But Wolverine has arrived, returned. Perfect timing, because they need a babysitter. They finally remembered that they actually have to leave someone in charge of the children. Bobby and Wolverine finally, like, meet properly, and it's awkward, because Wolverine's like, Bobby's like, I'm Rogue's boyfriend. And Wolverine's like, how do you two, and they're like, yeah, we're working on it. Rogue is very happy to see him, of course. And Storm recruits Logan to babysit. So Storm and Jean are going to go after the mutant who attacked the president, because Charles has tracked him to Boston. Meanwhile, Scott and Logan, who still hate each other, no surprise there, talk for a little bit and like about gassing the motorcycle. And Scott is actually going to go with the professor to visit Charles, Eric. Charles is going to visit Eric, not Charles is going to visit Charles. So Stryker comes to see Eric and injects, there's like a little bit of like an indentation on the back of his neck. And he just like drops like a drop of something and that like makes him agreeable or something. That's really creepy and pretty sure that's a violation of the Geneva Convention, but whatever. And let's see. So they talk about Cerebro and Charles School. Charles doesn't like smoking in the mansion and Wolverine comes in as Charles is about to put on Cerebro with a cigar. And Charles is like, there's no smoking in Cerebro. So Logan has to like awkwardly put out the cigar in his own hand. And Wolverine, there's a crack about like, he's like, does it matter? Wolverine asks like if it matters if he smokes. And Charles is like, only if you want to live the rest of your life as a 6-year-old girl, which I would pay to see that. That would be funny. Wolverine, but thinking he's a 6-year-old girl. That is way more entertaining than anything that has been done with his character arc for the last 20 years. Yeah. So apparently there's like a lot of mutants out there and they make the point that if Charles concentrates too hard, it can hurt people. So they find this mutant and he speaks German. So there's an amnesia connected with Wolverine's claws. So whatever Wolverine can't remember, everything before he got his claws is what he can't remember. And he sort of has like vague memories of getting the claws. So Scott and Charles leave to see Eric. Jean and Storm need to bring the mutant to the mansion. That is the request. And Mystique infiltrates Stryker's office, posing as the assistant, and accesses his computer. Oh God, this computer is the bane of my existence because this computer is the one that has all of these stupid Easter eggs, like the Maximoff twins and like Gambit and a bunch of others that led to this whole hoopla of can we use Wanda and Pietro in the MCU and screw Fox because anyway. Point being, also that I guess Remy was supposed to be in this film, but then there was like, I guess they couldn't use the same mutants from the one movie in the other movie. I don't really understand that logic. I guess because it was supposed to be a prequel, but it still seems kind of stupid. But also Gambit being in the Wolverine movie was kind of stupid. So, the Wolverine movie is stupid. That's the takeaway from that. But that's a subject for another time. So Mystique gets a lot of info about like Charles's plastic prison and gets info about Stryker building a copy of Cerebro. Why would he need a copy of Cerebro? He's really obsessed with Cerebro. But the real assistant shows up and Mystique poses as the garbage man and escapes. So she managed to download information about the plastic prison, but not about Cerebro because that was sealed by like a super secret password. Jean and Storm arrive to an abandoned church in Boston and they realize that he's a teleporter. It was kind of obvious, but whatever. So they get the guy where like there's like a gust of wind and then Jean traps him with like her powers. And he says that he didn't mean to. And he introduces himself as Kurt Wagner. And that he had no control. And we learned that he's very Catholic. So he doesn't remember anything before the White House. And so he has no idea what happened to him or how it happened. It's never really explained like how he ended up in a situation like he did. Whereas like with Eric, it makes sense, but there's a point where Kurt turns around on his bed and we see the same indentation as we saw on Eric's neck. And let's see. So they need to get Kurt back to the professor. So maybe Kurt can like mind melt with him or something. Wolverine has nightmares and he wakes up, he goes downstairs and he sees a kid who is like flipping through the channels with his eyes. I have no idea what mutant this kid is supposed to be, because in my plethora of knowledge of X-Men comics, as I'm staring at my collection of X-Men comics, I have zero recollection of this child. But cool power. I would have, you know what else is a cool power? A remote control. Anyway, the kid basically says that he doesn't sleep. He finds Bobby in the kitchen eating ice cream. And he's like, do you have any beer in here? And Bobby looks at him like, this is a school. And tells him there's like soda in the cupboard. So he goes and gets the soda out of the cupboard. And he's like, could you? And Bobby gives it, makes the soda cool. So, you know, Bobby must be great at parties because you never run out of ice. Charles arrives to see Eric and the guards escort him in, but Scott can't go. It's kind of cool. Like, it's, he has to be in like a plastic wheelchair to boot, and like, you can't have any metal anywhere near him. Huh, I wonder if that'll be an important plot point later. So Eric, says that, you know, the White House thing wasn't his fault, but tells him about Stryker. And we find out that Stryker's son was a student of Charles that he couldn't help in the way that Stryker wanted. Let me guess. I'm just going to throw this out there. Kid's a mutant. Stryker wanted a cure. Charles didn't provide cure. Stryker got pissed. Duh. So we learn that there's also a connection between Stryker and Logan, and that Charles knows about it, but for some reason didn't bother to tell Logan. Logan kind of bonds with Bobby, whose parents think he's just at a normal prep school. I wonder if they get, but I guess that begs the question, do the parents that can pay tuition pay tuition? Because, like, that's a lot of money to operate a school for so many children. Because you got it, like, groceries alone will cost you at least $500. That's not counting, like, washing the sheets, which is a lot of electricity. A kid that doesn't sleep and watches TV all night and day. Like this school is expensive, so who's footing the bill for this? I ask the practical questions that even in the comics we will never get answers to. So Charles is afraid to tell Logan everything, I guess, because guess he'll lose his puppy, I don't know. Eric tells him everything about, like, what he told Stryker, and that he basically told him everything about the school and all that jazz. So Charles freaks out, but gas is released inside the cell that knocks out Charles, and then Scott gets smacked around too. Charles really, Eric tells him that he should have killed him when he had the chance, and the TV kid sees intruders go, and he gets put to sleep by these, like,
Tranquilizer darts,
that's what they're called. Logan notices this, and basically the kids get attacked, and we see yet another throwaway kitty. I think she manages to get away and like gets into like the underground tunnels or whatever because she's badass, but we also see who I would guess is like Banshee's daughter, because she does the scream thing and then they like tranquilize her, but thankfully Peter gets her out. Logan actually stabs one, I guess. Peter Rasputin helps with the kids running. Peter is awesome, and they really should have taken him with them, but I guess somebody had to go with the kids and keep an eye on them and help them. I guess Peter's the babysitter now.
Peter was the big guy, right?
Yes. He's never named, but when he transforms into his metal body, he's the only option. For those that don't remember, Peter Rasputin's character reappeared in Deadpool, because out of all the characters that Deadpool interacts with in the comics, my first thought was going to be Peter Rasputin. Do you see how I'm bitter about the X-Men? Do you see why I have issues?
Well, keep in mind, when they did the second Deadpool movie, they kind of make reference as to how Fox wouldn't throw them a bone.
I know, but that's not the point, though. Like, they wasted, we'll get to Deadpool and the shit show that is Deadpool 2 when we get there. So
I don't even think I have that on the schedule, so that means we have 13 movies that we're doing, not 11.
Oh, no, then we don't have to do Deadpool, don't worry about it.
No,
I said it, I guess. Yeah, I guess I have to do.
We'll put the Deadpool movies at the end of the X-Men stuff. Maybe we'll do it before New Mutants. To buy
yeah,
us a little,
that works.
Buy us a little time on that, because neither of us have seen New Mutants yet.
I also still haven't seen the second Wolverine movie, so, like, I'm not going to until I actually review the movie. So, anyway, just because I think most of the movies that we've reviewed, I've seen already in some capacity at some point, so I think it'll be fun to just, like, go in blind. But anyway, basically, Bobby goes to the elevator. Peter gets Banshee and gets the other kids. Bobby goes after Rogue. Peter opens a bunker tunnel that is, like, basically it's so that they can get away. It's very clearly an escape tunnel. Like, kudos to Charles for building an escape tunnel. But, you know, you couldn't build a jet that, like, a cloaking device. So more bad guys arrive, and Bobby, Johnny, and Rogue have to find a new way around, I guess. So Peter and the kids get out safely, and Peter's like, I can help you. And Logan's like, no, you have to help the kids. I'm like, great, but you're not going to do that. So I guess Peter has to. Logan saves the mutant trio, which is Bobby, Rogue, and Johnny. And Logan gets them to the tunnel, but then they kind of end up in the garage. But before that, Stryker appears in front of Wolverine. It's like, oh, Wolverine, how nice to see you, with his creepy little voice. Rogue convinces them to help Logan, and Stryker basically tries to convince Logan to come with him, that he has answers, but an ice wall stops him. And fun fact, that is not CGI. That is just a legit large wall of ice that they put up there. Logan wants to stay, but Rogue says that they need him. So they get to the garage and they find a really nice Mazda, which is, of course, another Scott car. Like, is Logan just attracted naturally, drawn naturally to vehicles that belong to Scott just to piss him off? I think so.
I would.
Stryker finds Cerebro, and Rogue gives Logan his dog tags back, and Johnny plays with the radio, but he hits the wrong button, I guess, and it releases this little communication device that looks like an early, like, 2000 cell phone. And of course it's X-shaped, because why not? So they need to figure out where to go. We know that, you know, Jean and Storm told them that they're going to Boston. So Logan's like, we need to go to Boston. That's where Jean and Storm are. And Bobby's like, my parents live in Boston. So they bad guys have six, they have like six kids that they've apprehended, and Stryker got Cerebro. This is where we see Dr. McCoy on TV as the bodyguards, as bodyguard. It's at a bar. A hot chick played by Rebecca Romijn, take that with a, you know what's coming. It's the same bodyguard that we've seen earlier in the film. He's a jerk to Eric. He helps Stryker, and he's at a bar. So this very attractive blonde woman buys him a drink and says her name is Grace, and she flirts with him, and then they go to a really large bathroom for a bar, and it looks like they're about to do the naughty, but she put something in his beer, and he passes out. And then she, instead of, like, taking keys from him or, like, his ID or something, she actually injects him with something.
Inky.
And of course, as she does it, she reverts back to her original mystic form. Meanwhile, I guess this begs the question that I've had over the course of Mystique's journey throughout the entirety of the series. Why the hell did they paint her entire body instead of just, like, do blue skin, red hair, and a white dress like they do in the comics? It would have saved them so much time. And would have saved both Rebecca Romijn and Jennifer Lawrence a lot of pain and effort, even though I don't care about saving Jennifer Lawrence pain and effort. So that just seems cruel to me. Anyway, Stryker has Charles and has a neural inhibitor that prevents Charles from getting into his head. Stryker thinks that mutation is a disease. He wheels in his son, Jason. Apparently, Jason didn't appreciate all the shit that Stryker was likely doing to him, so he started toying with his parents and, like, projecting different things into their brain to the point that his wife killed herself. At that point, I feel like it would have been a lot easier to just, like, send the kid away and give him back to Charles instead of, like, I don't know, running illegal experiments on him, lobotomizing him, you know. Basically, he has, like, illusion powers, and he has control over, like, he can manipulate other people through that. Stryker was the one that arranged the attack on the president, as we already know, and the potion that basically he concocted to control the mutants won't work on Charles because he's too powerful. But it's really not because he's too powerful, because Eric Lencher is an Omega-level mutant and it worked on him. So maybe it more has to do with with Charles's powers, the fact that they are very mental, so he could probably fight off any mental intrusion. They just don't really clarify that in the movie. So basically, like I said, Stryker turned his son into a wheelchair laboratory something something.
Abomination.
And he's projecting shit to Charles, huh?
Abomination.
We can't use that word. That's an MCU word.
They did it. They made their own abomination first before the MCU got their hands on theirs.
This is a different kind of abomination. I honestly, the thing is like, whatever Stryker did to his son makes it very clear that he can control his son. And it makes me really sad for the character. Like, you can't help feeling bad for him. His own father turned him into a medical puppet. Like, that's just so sad. Anyway. Everyone arrives at Bobby's parents' place. Logan tries to contact Jean, no luck. He bonds with a cat, as one does. Johnny is very clearly jealous that Rogue and Bobby are a thing. Rogue gets Bobby's mom's clothing, and they kind of start making out until Bobby's mostly fine. Like, she gets his powers, but he, like, seems to pull back right on time. Logan finally gets a beer, and he meets the cat. There's bonding. The parents arrive, and he is introduced as Professor Logan. And his mom at one point asks, "What are you a professor of?" And his response is, "Art." Like, yeah. That would actually be hilarious. Normally Wolverine, like, runs the danger room sessions, but I find it funny that he didn't say, like, gym teacher or, like, you know, phys ed or health or something. He just goes with art. Like, you know what, Logan? You can be the art teacher. We can do a paint by claws. you know, like, attach, like, little paintbrush tips to the tips of the claws and, like, dip them in paint and see what happens.
Well, we'll see. But the thing is, though, is that that's the greatest twist, though.
Because this is true. Like,
because
you expect gym teacher.
Well, no. That's the opposite. Because when you think of gym teachers, they're always kind of like a little out of shape and all. And Logan is jacked. So it would be like, they would think, maybe they have like top end gym teachers. Like, no, they got top end art teachers.
Who does that make Charles the gym teacher, because he like runs the danger room sessions?
No, I would probably
I made it funny. Honestly, like, who's qualified to actually teach these children? Like, who's teaching them? It seems like Charles is the main, like, teacher, because, like, I guess Storm teaches history and I guess biology, and then we know Charles teaches literature and like physics.
Well, it's definitely a question that should be answered in the next episode, given how we actually see how Xavier kind of does, like, the passing of the torch type thing in there. And it kind of gives you the idea of how he gets people to do the different jobs that they do within the school. You kind of see that a little bit more in the next film.
Okay, fair. Well, we'll get to that one next time. So let's see. The guards, meanwhile, has been injected with iron, and he arrives to work, and this allows Eric to escape. It's actually pretty badass how he escaped, because he ends up like sucking the iron. He's like, "There's too much iron in your blood," and just like sucks it away. And, like, he uses all that iron, makes it into, like, these little balls, and then, like, breaks through all of this shit because it's plastic. It's not that hard to break. They really should have made it out of stronger plastic. Just saying. But whatever. So Eric has now escaped. And the next scene is really, I love this scene so much. Partially because actually I found out Sir Ian McKellen actually talked to the writers about how to make this scene work well. And this is Bobby's coming out scene, which is so ironic now. It's so funny. The X-Men movie predicted Bobby coming out of the closet. Because fun fact, Bobby Drake is gay in the comics. So this is funny. But anyway, Bobby basically comes out that he's a mutant. And his mom is like, have you tried not being a mutant? Have you tried not being a bitchy mom? Like, and she's like, this is all my fault. And then Johnny just has to go like, oh, actually the father passes the mutant gene. I'm like, not helping. It's funny though, like when he turns the cup of tea that she's drinking into ice, she like pours it out onto the thing. Onto the table, and the cat just starts licking it. Bobby's brother, meanwhile, calls the cops. Jean and Storm can't get through to anyone at the school. Storm kind of bonds with Kurt. And they talk about the fact that Kurt is an optimist and like tries to see the good in people. And I really wish we would have gotten a backstory on Storm to kind of show why she's kind of jaded with humanity when she talks to him in that moment. Because we don't really, the only characters that get any kind of backstory are Eric and Jean. And like Wolverine sort of gets a backstory. But it's just interesting, the characters that like really needed backstories didn't get them. Anyway.
Well, I think that's kind of the problem with, in a way, going in with a large ensemble cast right off the bat and then having to carry that through throughout your franchise.
I think what would have worked better is if, like, and this is something we'll get to a little bit more when we talk about X-Men First Class, but, like, there was room to, I think, there's things that you could have done of even, like, a little montage of, like, recruiting everybody that they kind of do in the X in First Class, but that would have kind of just given a little bit of depth. Cause like, if you're only going based on the movies, you literally know nothing about Storm other than like in the first movie, she had a weird accent and can control the weather. Anyway, Jean says she's got a signal on somebody. And so I love that line, have you tried not being a mutant? Logan fills kind of everybody in. I think he finally gets a hold of Jean and Storm. Meanwhile, the police arrive and Logan comes out and they try to get out and the guy's like, drop the knives. And Logan's like, I can't. And then Logan gets shot in the head. Johnny, meanwhile, shows that he is in fact Pyro and sets everything on fire, that he's one of those dangerous mutants. In a move that I really like is Rogue actually, because they were told to get on the ground. So Rogue actually uses her powers to take Johnny's and knock him out so she can like take out the fires. I guess Storm was going to show up and bring the rain, but budget cuts and a rush production. Made it a little bit difficult to do that. So they just went with Rogue taking Bobby's powers, which I think works even better because up to this point, Rogue hasn't really done anything intentionally with her powers. So this is actually a really cool moment for her because she gets to do stuff. Logan heals, he's fine. Jean and Storm arrive just in time. Bobby's parents suck, and everyone gets on a plane, and they meet Nightcrawler. Because in the job in circus, he was known as the Incredible Nightcrawler. Fun fact, Alan Cummings got the role because he does, in fact, speak German, beating out Neil Patrick Harris. That would not have worked.
I couldn't see Neil Patrick Harris.
I can't see that.
No.
I really can't. It's just a very... Part of what's interesting about Nightcrawler... Part of what's really interesting about Nightcrawler as a character, and we'll get to this more when we do character analysis at the end of the show, is that, like, Nightcrawler is very loose character and kind of a trickster in some ways, but also very pious and very reserved in others. And like, Neil Patrick Harris is great, but there's just so much complexity to Nightcrawler that I don't think he could have brought. But Alan Cummings did such an amazing job. I almost feel bad for him with all of that makeup and everything, like that just like for such a small role. Charles has visions, and that he's standing in, that Jason is projecting, and then another sees Charles and a small child and says they need to find the other students. And Jean, and for some reason, actually, this is really interesting, when Jason projects himself into Charles's vision, he is actually a little girl. Don't we have any, so they're on the plane and two bogeys approach. These are American Air Force pilots. And I think this is actually only the second film in history to show a female Air Force pilot. And anyway, evasive maneuvers, don't they have any weapons? Storm is a weapon and brings on tornadoes. This gets rid of one plane, but another manages to shoot before it retreats. And the pilot punches out. The two rockets are coming. Jean gets one, but the other hits the plane. But what's interesting is when Jean does this, her eyes have a flame of a glow. Ooh, I wonder what that could be. So mysterious.
Wonder Woman. Oh wait, wrong universe.
So Rogue falls out of the plane because she was like, so she was freaking out and couldn't like buckle herself properly, and Kurt gets her out. Or he like teleports in the air, grabs her, teleports back, and he saves her. So they're still falling until something closes the hole and slows them down so that they actually kind of like stop in midair as opposed to falling to the ground. That person is Magneto, and Mystique is there too. Rogue thanks Kurt for saving her life. Eric fills them in on Stryker, on the Sun. Charles's mind could kill all of them. Eric is very happy he has a helmet. Eric confesses that he told them everything because he had no choice. And that once again, these movies unintentionally connect hatred of mutants with anti-Semitism. Because one of the things that they mention is like that Stryker wants to solve the mutant problem. Where have we heard that before? The Jewish problem, the solution to the Jewish problem. So as much as these movies harp on Eric and forget to mention that he's Jewish and acknowledge that aspect of it, and the comics do this too, they sure love using lines from the Holocaust. So they also fill in that Stryker is responsible for making Wolverine. Mystique knows where Stryker is, but not the location. They think that like the location is like it trapped somewhere, and Wolverine's like, well, is it me? And Wolverine's like, and Eric tells him something like, it's not all about you, and he actually mean Kurt. So Jean mind melts Kurt to find out. So they find out where it is, and it's back to the underground base, because Wolverine apparently didn't bother to look much deeper other than the snow. So Jean and Wolverine share a kiss, but she puts a stop to it because she's with Scott. And let me tell you, this is still the most annoying love triangle in the history of comics. There is no other love triangle that is worse. Like, none. So Mystique and Kurt talk about appearance and hiding and when they Kurt is basically like, why don't you look like everybody else? And Mystique says, I shouldn't have to. This line is amazing, but there's one part that pisses me off. Do you know what it is, Mike?
I don't know.
Do you want to take a guess why a conversation with Kurt and Mystique would annoy me? Going once?
Being normal? Going
twice? Nope, because Kurt is Mystique's son in the comics.
Oh.
And they don't mention it. Granted, like, I think Alan Cummings is actually older than Rebecca Romijn, so, like, that would have been awkward. But, like, they never mention ages, and we know Mystique is a lot older than she looks. So, like, it's entirely possible for her to have been his mom, but we're never gonna get a mention of that. So, they put up tents, and Jean goes to see Wolverine, but it's actually Mystique. And there's this kind of like montage of her switching between different characters, including Rogue, which like, ew, she's the kid. Like, what is wrong with you, Mystique? But, and Wolverine also looks like kind of disgusted, like, no, not into that. And so they don't have uniforms for the kids, but they have like cool jackets or something. And Eric makes a joke about Rogue's hair. Like, nice hair! And Rogue is just like taking her glove off, and somebody grabs her like, no, not the time. Johnny talks to Eric about like, what's your name? And Eric's like, he says, Johnny. And Eric's like, no, what's your real name? And he goes, Pyro. That's dope. Eric is impressed. So Cerebro is completed. The second Cerebro, I should say. And they're keeping the kids to test the machines, the ones they kidnapped from the mansion. So they agree that Wolverine will go in first, but Eric actually sends Mystique because they'll need Wolverine. Mystique is a badass. Like, she walks through all these guys and then seals herself inside the chamber while flipping them all off. It was beautifully done. It's a great scene. Charles and the kid, meanwhile, go to Cerebro, but this is still an illusion. Men are trying to break into the control room where Mystique is because apparently they don't have backups for their backups. Magneto and Cerebro, and basically somebody's trying to gain control entrance into the room, and we think it's the guards, but it's actually Magneto. Cerebro has been located. Storm and Kurt go after the kids. Jean looks for Scott, and Cerebro and Logan goes after Stryker. Stryker gives Jason time to find the mutants. Stryker leaves, and Stryker's basically like, shoot anybody that comes this way, even if it's me. Scott attacks Jean and she sends him backwards. Storm and Kurt find the kids. Jubilee is mentioned by name, actually. And she's like, everybody's fine. The kids are fine. And Kurt teleports down to them. We also learned that Kurt can only teleport to as far as he can see, because then he could get stuck inside a wall, and that's gross. Scott's fine, but something else is wrong. Logan finds info about him and the chamber where they made him. Stryker shows up with a character who is actually Lady Deathstrike. Stryker leaves while she and Logan fight, and she has like these adamantium nails, I guess, which is really creepy. Meanwhile, back on the plane, Johnny refuses to wait any longer and just kind of goes off. Logan kills Lady Deathstrike by basically pumping her full of adamantium, liquid adamantium. Charles is finding all the mutants and to kill them. That's the plan. Magneto pulls the grenade pins on the soldiers. That was pretty funny. And Eric goes into the Cerebro room with the helmet on. So Jean tells Scott we're too late, and they all get a bad headache as like Charles is concentrating really hard. But because Eric's wearing his shiny helmet, he is immune. Eric does something that knocks Cerebro out. Like, he enters the room and just, like, rearranges the metal planes or something inside the room. It's never really explained why that's necessary. And Stryker escapes out into the cold Canadian air. He enters the room. So Eric enters the room where Jason is, and Jason can't get into his head because of the helmet. Mystique, as Stryker, tells Jason something. They leave and seals the room. Instead of finding the mutants, they're gonna find all the humans to kill them. I think at times they make Magneto too evil. I think that's an important point to mention. So Wolverine stabs Stryker and tells him but Stryker tells him that he volunteered for the experiments and that he was like the best thing he ever created. And that, like, they can achieve great things if they work together. Meanwhile, the dam is breaking. Water's falling out. Stryker says, come with me, and I'll tell you everything. Logan ties Stryker to the wheel of a plane. I think it's the plane that Stryker was going to use to escape. Stryker feels the headache, and all the other humans, too. Scott is a jerk to Kurt. Kurt has to see where he's going, because they can't really break into the room. But she says that, like, they have to. So Storm and Kurt teleport inside. They see the little girl, Jason. Eric and Mystique find Stryker. Magneto seemingly kills him. Storm brings in the Winter to kind of freeze everything around the room while Mystique, Eric, and Pyro fly away. Charles feels the cold and that kind of jerks him into waking up, but the dam is breaking and water is, you know, coming in. So Logan goes back in to save everyone. Everyone's running, trying to get out. Logan closes one of the spillway and tells him that there's another exit. One of the kids falls and Logan like picks him up and carries him. The helicopter's gone. And so is, what's his face? Stryker. The plane still here, but Rogue is like awkwardly flying. It's not really made clear to me why the plane needed to be moved or why Rogue was flying it, but I guess to bring it closer. Stryker's alive, but is chained to a wall that's about to be engulfed by water. Logan tosses his dog tags at him, and Charles tells Scott they need to go to Washington. They learn Pyro has left with Magneto. The plane is leaving, the plane is having power issues, and water's coming. So Jean, they basically need like a jolt or a boost, and Jean decides she cannot possibly do this inside the plane and exits the plane and seals the doors. She gets the plane online, which is unclear why she couldn't do that from the inside, holds the water back, pushing it up, and says, this is the only way. The Phoenix is out, the water consumes her, and Scott, you know, takes her death really well. They're all set for a moment, but they leave. Meanwhile, the president is about to address the nation, and the feed is cut, and everything freezes, and everyone freezes, everything turns dark. And Charles addresses the president and shows him Stryker's files. He's like, how did you get these files? And he goes, I know a little girl that can walk through walls. Cool, Kitty's only useful in passing. But basically, he doesn't really threaten the president, but he gives him an opportunity. And Scott's like barely holding it together. Charles pushes the president to talk about a better future. Everything kind of turns back to normal, and we still see the original speech, but when the camera pans back to the president, we see this blue folder. And we aren't given exactly what the president did. Anyway, so Scott and Charles talk about Jean, her powers, and feeling left behind. And Wolverine's hair is like super Wolverine-y in this scene. Charles tells him that Jean made a choice. The kids are all back in school, Peter too, Jean, we see her voiceover, hear her voiceover. She says, mutants are the key to evolution. Basically, same speech from the first movie, just with Jean's voice. And a bird is seen in the water. It honestly looks more like a butterfly than a bird, but whatever. So here's the thing. Killing Jean off was a half-assed decision, and it shows. That's the movie, basically. Like, her death is, I guess, necessary to bring on the Phoenix or whatever, but her death is so stupid. It's completely stupid. Why, Mike, tell me, why does she need to get out of the plane to jumpstart it and hold the water back at the same time when they can just fly away as soon as they get the jumpstart?
Because reasons.
Well, these reasons are stupid. As I found out, this was kind of something that they decided kind of after the movie was already like in the making. But it's just annoying. Let's see here. What do I have for my notes?
Before you go for your notes, I want to say the guy who played Stryker, Brian Cox, good choice.
Excellent choice. He was a great choice.
Just to give people background on Brian Cox, he was Argyle Wallace in Braveheart. He also did an episode of Superman the Animated Series. He was in the movie The Long Kiss Goodnight. One of the big shows that he was really well known for was the third season of the TV show Deadwood on HBO, where he played Jack Langshire, or Langrish, can't read. He also did The Escapist. He did some episodes of, where is it real quick? I have it right here. Where did it go? Shit. Here's the one F-bomb. Good Omens. He was in that. He was the voice of Death.
Oh, that's oh, what he, that was good. That was
and
good
he voice. Also and he also did Penny Dreadful.
No, he's an excellent actor. I think he was a good choice. I wish I wish we'd gotten a little bit more of like his, I mean, we got enough of his backstory, I guess. But it also makes me wonder like why he needed the president's permission to stage this operation or whatever, but it's fine.
Well, because technically speaking, in the first film, you almost had a legitimate war between the two sides.
Oh, yeah, with the Mutant Registration Act. Fair. Anyway, I just... So this is a very loosely based off the comic book story God Loves, Man Kills, which is kind of about Nightcrawler and about, like, this evil preacher. But... It's a great storyline. I definitely recommend reading it. But anyway, back to this movie. Kurt is so sweet. I wish we'd gotten more of him. I guess they wanted to bring him back, but Alan Cummings was like, "You're bringing me back for a couple of scenes. Like, I'm not wasting them." Like, they decided that like it would be kind of a waste of time to bring him back because the amount of scenes they had for him versus the amount of times it takes to put on all that makeup and like prosthetics, which is too much. Which I agree, but the solution should have been, "Oh, we should write more in Nightcrawler, not we just shouldn't use him in the first place."
Well, they actually did fix that per se. And that was, as this is also around the time when movies were getting video games.
Like, yeah, this is, but when they, we're
and
not.
When they, and when they did the X3 video game for the third X-Men movie, a lot of focus was actually done on Nightcrawler to write him out of the movie so he didn't have to appear in the movie. So if you actually played the video game, it actually writes him out of the movie.
That's nice, but the average moviegoer doesn't play video games.
Oh no, I agree. So... I agree, but I'm just explaining real quick, that's what they did.
No, I get that and I read that, but to me it's cheap in some, like, I appreciate that he got focus in the game and everything, but like so much more that could have been done. Anyway,
but also keep in mind, think about it, who's a target demographic when it comes to the superhero movies?
Stupid boys.
It's not adults like us, it's children.
It's stupid boys.
I wouldn't say it's just stupid boys, but...
Well, they forget that girls also read and know comics and love comics, but anyway. Yeah.
That conversation because Power Rangers is the exact same way.
Yep. Speaking as the only girl on the Power Ranger podcast, but anyway.
At least we have a woman on our
podcast. You know, just like in Ninja Storm and in Dino Thunder, you have one girl. See, I mean, I'm even wearing a red shirt. Anyway, to get back to X2, this was actually, out of the original trilogy, this was always my favorite movie. Just because I liked the fact that the bad guy wasn't Magneto. I like things when Magneto was not the bad guy, but we're not allowed to be happy, because we'd go back to the same old formula of Magneto as the bad guy. I like the fact that the X-Men actually needed to team up with Magneto in order to save the day, and they really couldn't have done it without Eric or Misty. Granted, Eric kind of fudged it up towards the end by trying to kill all humans, but I think they do at times, and this is criticism of the comics as well. Sometimes they make Eric just too evil. But anyway, I think Alan Cummings does an amazing job. He's a great actor and he does such a great job as Nightcrawler. I know he was like really uncomfortable in the prosthetics and all that. Like, I totally, like, I can't relate, but like I can understand. But I liked the character. I wish we could have fleshed him out a little bit more. Nightcrawler presents a question of where did Nightcrawler come from? How did Stryker have him? Like, clearly Stryker staged the whole thing to get the president to authorize the invasion of a prep school. But it's kind of unclear how he did that. Or also how Nightcrawler looked kind of pasty, like maybe it was makeup or whatever at the start. Anyway. The movie's largest flaw is, I think, Jean. because we're never really given an explanation of like why are her powers suddenly out of whack compared to from the first movie. Is it because she's been using more of her powers? Is it because her powers have been growing recently? We're never really given an explanation. And then she just dies in a really stupid and pointless way. And I don't even like Jean. Like, I'm perfectly happy she died. But that doesn't mean her death was well written. And I think Bryan Singer even confirmed. Actually, I think Bryan Singer didn't direct this movie. Or was it the third one he didn't direct? I can't keep track.
Hold on, give me a sec.
I think it was the third one he didn't direct. Because he just went off to direct Superman Returns. But I guess like last minute or partially through filming, they're like, oh, we don't have anything for Jean. We should probably kill Jean. And it really shows because the explanation that's given for Jean's death is also like really anticlimactic. And Scott screaming, Jean, is forever meme and forever funny. But anyway. I personally, and Mike can look up the IMDb information and let us know in a little bit of how this movie ranks against the first X-Men. But I will say that I definitely enjoyed this film a little bit more than the first one. I liked the first one, but I think it was it was a little bit unsure of its direction. But I gave it props for being a pretty independent story compared, like, and not borrowing from the comics. This one, however, borrows completely from the, loosely borrows from the comics. I would argue it's still pretty much an original story that is inspired by the characters and story of God Loves, Man Kills.
So, Bryan Singer directed X-Men, X2, X-Men United, Superman Returns, lol, X-Men Days of Future Past, X-Men Apocalypse, and he also directed Bohemian Rhapsody.
That explains my issues with that movie too.
He also directed The Usual Suspects, which is the movie that actually
interestingly enough, as we go into this next movie, we are going to see a lot of things that I think bring to light issues that exist within the movie industry. Which is like studio pressures, rush production, and shitty directors.
Just to throw this out there, Bryan Singer was a producer uncredited for X-Men Origins Wolverine. He was credited as producer for First Class, Days of Future Past, Apocalypse, and also apparently he's one of the brain trusts behind the TV show House MD.
Yeah, I'm going to chuck that to other people.
Which House is an amazing show.
Anyway, Bryan Singer, I don't like him. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't like him as a person. I really don't like him as a director. And I guess there was a lot of like unprofessional behavior that happened on the filming set of the first two X-Men movies to the point where Halle Berry actually was not going to return until she found out that Singer wasn't going to be involved. And we can talk more about this in the next film, but I think it's important to really stress that this film is really solid. I can still rewatch it and really enjoy it. I liked the little cameos of different characters, which is ironic because later down the line when that happens, I'll be very pissed. So here, I don't mind it. I like the fact that they actually included Banshee's daughter because he does actually have a daughter that is an ex, that is so she's a mutant. She does have her father's powers and she's kind of associated with this X-Men world. I'll bite as a member of X-Factor, but it's a separate story. I liked the fact that they included Peter because you know, Peter's a character that I have some similarities with, being that we were both from Russia. So I always liked him as a character. I think he has a lot of potential that is wasted in the X films. But that's a separate conversation. Mike, can you look up the kind of IMDb stats and let us know how this movie ranked?
Yeah.
So compared to the first X-Men.
So we never actually did it for the first X-Men movie.
We did not.
Yeah, so X-Men, the first one, clocked in at 1 hour 44 minutes and did a 7.4 out of 10 on the IMDbers. And then X2, X-Men United, clocked in at 2 minutes and 14 minutes for a score of 7.4 out of 10 on the IMDb.
So the second X-Men, sorry, I missed it. What was the first X-Men's rankings? The
7.4. They're both 7.4.
I think that's fair. I still think that this movie's a little bit better than the first one, but I don't disagree vehemently with audiences' opinions because the two films are very well built off each other, and it's a decent sequel that is not, I think, is slightly better, but isn't profoundly better than the original. So I agree with that. So Mike, where can the people find you on those social medias?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at TheLindemomSony5, Facebook at Facebook.com/X75Productions, Twitch at Twitch.tv/TheMichaelX75. I'm gaming a lot more, playing Fall Guys, doing that medieval thing, because that's what season two is all about. It's about, they have a medieval theme this season, even though they only gave us 4 maps. Really, just 4. But we're apparently getting Sonic the Hedgehog soon, so that's going to be kind of funny and really disturbing at the same time. But and then, of course, you can find everything else on the website at txhthockey.com, and for this show specifically, Nerdy-Notions.
And you can find my fabulous self on geekgirl101.tumblr.com, Geeky Captain on Instagram, Geeky Kaplan, my brand new and mostly unused Twitter account, and of course at geekycaptainwrites.wordpress.com, my new writing platform where you can see my rantings over comic books and film reviews, even though I'm in grad school and haven't published anything since last week or 2 weeks ago. But keep an eye out for new content anyway. And so thank you to our negative 120 listeners, and we will catch you next time when we will be divided and upset and annoyed at the existence of X3, The Last Stand.